on air, online, on Twitter.
Jennifer Campbell is always on.
Unfiltered, opinionated, and ready to speak her mind at a moment's notice.
This is the Jennifer Campbell Show on 570 News and Rogers TV, Cable 20.
No, there ain't nothing that I gotta prove. You think your words will make me black and blue, but I think I'm pretty with these old boots on. I think it's funny when I drink too much. You try and change me, you can go to hell. 'Cause I don't wanna be nobody else. I like the chip I got in my front teeth. And I got bad tattoos you won't believe. So kick out the jams, kick out the soul. Pour another glass of that rock and roll. Turn up the band, find the hole. Gonna lose control tonight. What do you want from me?
Good morning to you. It is 9:05 on a sunny Thursday morning. Whew! It's a fast-paced game, this radio gig, you guys. I just had a technical issue. It's no secret that I'm no technical genius. And so I said to Producer Polly, I can't hear anything in my headphones. Producer Polly sends in the troops. In comes Producer James to save the day. He's wearing a cape and everything. Presses one button and blares his ears off of his head because I had cranked the headphones up because I couldn't hear anything. I'm so sorry, James. You're. I will pay for any sort of hearing tests you need.
One of the engineers was in here yesterday afternoon doing some work on the equipment, so I wonder if maybe that had something to do with it.
Polly, you know damn well that when you say to me, one of the engineers was in here working, you know you're leading me into a path of, you know, slanderous things, because I'm going to say something. It's something probably, you know, sarcastic and maybe cruel about engineers fixing things. And I shouldn't do that because, well, I shouldn't do that. I preach about being kind and gracious and trying to see the good in people's hearts.
Should work. That was the first statement of any radio engineer when they came out of the womb.
Yep.
Should work.
Should work.
Did you try turning it off and turning it back on again? What did you do to it? Well, what you need to do is give it a 6:40, 7:34 update at the strike of noon when the owl howls at the stop sign. And you're like, what language are you speaking? I don't know what you're saying. Why are you? Just fix it. Also should be known that I am the love of my life is a radio engineer. So I feel free to say these things because... I mean, really. Anyway, okay. Thank you.
I remember one time at the old station, remember when we were up in Waterloo?
Yeah.
I accidentally shut down the computer. I wasn't supposed to do that, but I didn't know that. And the actual computer was in a different room. And so I had to call the engineer and go, where's the restart button? I accidentally shut it down. He goes, well, what did you do that for? It's like, okay, I already feel bad. Don't make me feel worse. Just fix it.
Yeah. You do your job, and I'll do mine. Can I say that? No, probably not. How funny is it, though, this morning with the Zuckerberg and the CNN and the privacy, and they're gonna get us and they're spying on us and all of the stuff. I mean, I've seen 17 people today take a quiz to find out what kind of garlic bread they are. You know, the quiz you take, and then it says, okay, Facebook's going to access your friends list and your pictures and your mother's maiden name and probably your social insurance number and your birthday too. But do you want to know what kind of garlic bread you are? Take this quiz. So are we concerned or are we not? I'm confused. Are we worried? Are we not worried? I don't know. Okay. What else did I have to talk about? I don't remember. I'm sorry. I'm a little bit flighty today. That sometimes is really good for the show. It sometimes is really bad for the show. Oh, Polly, we didn't get to talk about John Oliver and the gay bunny book that's outselling Mike Pence's family bunny book, which is so fun. So we're definitely going to do that today. Also, we have a mother coming in here to share her daughter's story. A mom's name is Kim McCullough, and she is going to share a story of her daughter's struggle with mental health services, accessing them, and kind of rebuilding her life. The Ontario government this morning pledged $2.1 billion to, quote, rebuild the mental health system. Is that enough? We'll discuss that with Kim McCullough, who's the mom of Hillary McCullough, coming up. That is after 9:30. Okay, so let's start this morning with the term that we've been hearing, thank goodness gracious, pay equity. We've been hearing that a lot as of late. Every time we talk about pay equity on this show, I get a surge of angry, ragey, misogynistic tweets about how it doesn't exist. So I always, always welcome the experts on the show to tell us why it does and answer those tweets and those ragey people with far more grace than I could ever conjure. Shannon Sampert is an associate professor of political science at the University of Winnipeg and joins us this morning about pay equity laws and how actually we need to do more. This is not going to close the gap. Good morning to you, Shannon. Thanks for taking the time.
Oh, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Okay, so you talk in this article that we have from the National News Watch that, of course, this has been a Liberal government issue for some time. In fact, we go all the way back to the 70s with Prime Minister Pierre Trudeau, some human rights legislation that ultimately ended up with a big payout to federal civil servants. Take us back there and let's see how far we've come.
That was a long time ago, and it was a decision that was put upon the federal government, a requirement that they actually had to do a huge pay equity payment to all female employees of the federal government that had been deliberately or underpaid compared to men who were doing work of similar value. And actually, I was one of the many women that was provided a kind of a lump sum check in the 1980s that was provided because I was one of the women that was underpaid compared to my male colleagues that were doing work of similar value. And at that point, that was a major pay equity payment. They did a sort of a side-by-side review and determined that women were being underpaid compared to male colleagues that were doing the same kind of work. And the continuation has been going on ever since in the federal government. And pay equity legislation has been implemented in provinces across the country. And that sort of has been the norm. Then the decision was made in Newfoundland that when provinces have to balance the budget, suddenly you don't have to pay women the same as men. Decision was made that pay equity can go out the window when budgets have to be balanced, which was kind of surprising and a letdown for a lot of feminists who were going, wait a second, that doesn't seem very fair.
No kidding.
Yeah, so this is sort of the latest in the decision by the federal government. This is the latest in the pay equity battle, and a lot of feminists were looking at this going, it's just a little small step in pay equity. It's only a kind of a reset of what we were prior to the conservatives, who basically changed some legislation to take pay equity off the table. And it's a very, very small step and a continuation of a battle that women have been doing since the 1970s, as you say.
Shannon, then tell me what it was like. What was the mood? What was the reception? What was the vibe like then as a woman who was part of this payout? How were you received? Because sometimes, like I just mentioned, you know, we talk about pay equity, we talk about the gender gap, and I still have so many people insisting it doesn't exist, that insisting it's a myth, insisting it's some, you know, liberal snowflake made up thing that hasn't proven itself to be real.
I just dealt with a phone call from somebody who had read my column and said the same thing. He phoned me from Ontario and took the time to phone me in my department and said, you know, this doesn't exist at all. I work beside women in the factory and they just don't work as hard as I do. So that's the reason why they don't work the overtime. But the statistics are there. And, you know, and I understand that the kind of like men have felt very put upon in the last 20 years. They always feel like they feel like they're under attack. They feel like they too have to sort of, they feel like they are losing in the equity battle because women are gaining. But this is not a cup of water. This is not a barrel of water. When women make gains, men do not lose. It's just a more fair way of looking at, you know, what is available for all of us. Statistically, women are paid less. Now, the problem is also that women go into jobs that fundamentally aren't paid as well. Women tend to go into the humanities. Men tend to go into the sciences and engineering faculties at universities, and that might be why now the gender gap continues. And so we try to get young women interested in things like sciences and engineering at a very, very early age. I mean, that would explain the gender gap now. But in the 1970s, for women, it really was when we were being paid, you know, receptionists were being paid less than the guys who worked in the mail room, and we were doing work of very, very similar educational requirement. It was pretty hard to explain why we were getting paid less just because we didn't have certain genitalia. And yet it existed.
Yeah. It's funny because, and I think that as women and as feminists, we've had to wrap our brain around that. You use the glass of water analogy. I always say it's not a pie. You know, because we won't run out of pieces. Equality doesn't mean that we're going that men lose power or lose pay. It just simply means equality. And I read something that stayed with me, and it's worth repeating, I think, because I read something about someone said, you know, it's very hard for men today to understand what equality really looks like because they've always had the power. So to them, us asking for equality is an inversion of power. It's a power flip in their minds.
Mm-hmm. But I like to tell men too, though, to walk into their daughters or their mothers or their aunties or their sisters' bedrooms and say to them, you know, today I'm going to give you 75% and I'm going to take 100%, and explain to them how that works, and explain to them, look them in the eye and say, I'm worth more than you are, and just see how that feels. But for a lot of men, they just don't think that there is a difference, and they haven't been able to actually get their head around that there is a difference in the way that women are paid. And I find that very, very hard to explain to them.
Yeah.
That there is actually a very real difference. As a professor, we've found that even as a professor, I come into a university and I am paid less than my male colleagues for all manner of reasons. I don't negotiate as easily or as well. I've been socially trained, socially conditioned to not negotiate. Men are given market supplements, so they come into the university system and are automatically given more time for their experience in the field than I would be given for experience in the field. They're started at steps way above I am. It's remarkable just how the perception of having a male professor over a female professor puts them ahead of women from the get-go. And it's just a social conditioning thing, and it's really hard to beat.
And you talked too in the article that, you know, despite policies, this is a study from Judith Ann McDonald and Robert Thornton from 2016, where they said, despite policies supporting greater gender equity, the progress towards equity in Canada has slowed. So it's not enough to just legislate equal pay. We have to, like you just talked about, dig into those social issues and constraints that make it, just a different battle for men or for women, pardon me, which of course includes childcare.
Childcare is a huge one, making sure that affordable, accessible childcare, and not having somebody take care of kids in homes, but childcare in daycare settings is available. Daycare in places like Toronto and Ontario, very, very expensive. Places like Manitoba in rural communities, non-existent. So one of the aims of pay equity for this federal government is to get women working. You can't get women working if you don't have a place for their kids. And daycare is hugely, hugely important. And when we saw the need for getting women into the workplace when Canada went to war in World War II, we saw factories actually putting daycare spaces in the factories. So when it's important to get women working, we actually made space for their children. And so we just have to get real about it and actually make spaces for children now, too, and ensuring that we have safe spaces that are accessible and affordable for women to put their children into daycare.
And that's why you say budget 2018 was, for many feminists, a bit of a letdown. There was no extra money allocated for childcare.
That's right, and Paul Martin had that as part and parcel of his budget when his very short-term government was in power. And Mr. Trudeau, who has made all sorts of signs about being, you know, a feminist prime minister, really should embrace this as part of his government as well. Childcare, a national childcare program, would go a very long way to get women working and get women back in the workforce in a very big way.
Shannon Sanford, Associate Professor at the University of Winnipeg in the Political Science Department. I appreciate your time, your stories this morning. Thanks so much.
Have a good day.
You too. Take good care. Good luck with the phone calls.
Okay.
Thanks. Bye-bye. And Shannon's story about, you know, taking that phone call from someone who says, well, you know, I work in a factory and I don't see it. The person beside me makes, you know, she makes as much as I do. But that's another thing. It's very short-sighted, isn't it, to say, well, I haven't seen it, so it doesn't exist. I mean, I haven't seen the pyramids, but I'm pretty sure they're real. Yeah. It's a big issue. And I hope that the male allies and all of the wonderful men who listen to this show and send in emails and phone calls are talking to other males about this. And the other great thing you can do for a female, if you're a guy and you're wondering, okay, well, what do I do? How do I help with this? I want to help. I want equality for people. Is go tell a woman what you're making. This culture that we have of, oh, you're not allowed to talk about how much money you make. They've set it up like that as for a reason. And I don't think it's to protect us. I really don't. A lot of big companies, corporations don't want you to talk about with your colleagues, with your peers about how much money you're making. Ask yourself why. It is 9:21. We are back with a gay bunny book. I mean, here comes Peter Cottontail hopping down the bunny trail. Ooh, queer eye for the straight bunny. I like this story a lot. It brings me joy. We're going to talk about John Oliver and what success he has found with what started as a stunt to irritate Mike Pence. It's probably working at this point. We'll talk about that next on 570 News.
If there's one thing Canadians always love to talk about, it's the weather. That's because the weather affects everyone. And no matter where you're traveling, you can always rely on the 570 News Extreme Weather Center, brought to you by Hefner Collision Center. Quality repairs to all makes and models.
Okay, we're going to have a little bit of light laughter before we get into a very serious conversation with a local mom, Kim McCullough. She's going to tell us the story of her daughter, Hillary McCullough, and her struggle and journey with mental health. That's coming up. Okay, so how long's the clip, Polly? How long is the clip? Should I play that right away, or should I just hear? You talk on the phone. So there's a children's book about Mike Pence's gay bunny, which is topping the Amazon charts right now. Now, if you have not heard the story of the little gay bunny, it is a fictional bunny book.
The clip is 52 seconds. Sorry, I was on the phone.
That's okay. Let's play it right. Let's let John Oliver, because he's a brilliant comedic mind, let's let him tell you on Ellen DeGeneres about the little gay bunny book.
Mike Pence, who is a man who I think has few qualities to his name, he's written a book about his bunny, or his family have written a book about his bunny. And so we, on top of that, have released our own book about his bunny, where his bunny falls in love with another male bunny and gets married, because that's the world we want to live in. So it's a children's book.
And this children's book is, right now, as we sit here and speak, yours is number one on Amazon.
It is?
Yes.
Fortunately, we have sold out, because we were not anticipating people really buying it.
Uh-huh.
But you can. They're doing a reprint, so you can still buy it. You can buy the second printing, so it'll take a few weeks. But
I love it so much. The fact that you wrote a children's book where his bunny falls in love with another male bunny makes me happier than I can
good,
even tell
good.
You. It's just, it's good. And that it's number one.
So the best part of all of it was when this, and now the original comedic bit that happened on John Oliver's show is, I mean, it's very funny. It is, it's got some language in it for sure. But at first it just started as a joke. This was just going to be a bit on the program. And he said, but he did say, you know, please buy this book for your children or buy it for any child you know. Buy it because you know it would annoy Mike Pence. Plus, it's a book full of great lessons. Love who you love. And ain't nothing you should ever be ashamed of. And then buy it they did. By Tuesday morning, as you've just heard, it had risen to the number one spot on the Amazon bestseller list, knocking out pre-ordered copies of the upcoming memoir by James Comey, the former director of the FBI. It's on its second printing. You just heard Mr. Oliver tell that to Ellen DeGeneres. And I just, you know why it brings me happiness in my heart? Because I mean, if you are a kind, well-meaning human being, there's nothing left to say about Mike Pence and Donald Trump. There's just not. You can't reason with people who support that kind of hatred, that bigotry, that racism, that homophobia. There's nothing you can do about that anymore. There's just nothing. But this is genius. This is brilliant. You know, it's such a creative way to make a point. And I think that's what I love about it. All right. Polly, we're going to take a break. We are going to come back after we get to the newsroom next. In the meantime, I'm going to Amazon. Do I have my Visa here? I'm going to order Marlon Bundo, the Gay Bunny book, A Day in the Life Of, during this break. We're going to come back with a local story of a mom's heartbreak over the way her daughter struggled with mental health and receiving mental health services. It's going to be a really interesting conversation, and I want you to welcome Kim McCullough as she comes into our studio. It's going to be a tough one for her, and she's so brave to come in and tell it in her own words. After this, 570 News.
John Wilson's Weather Guarantee. Weekdays at 7:11, only on 570 News.
Welcome back. It is 9:33. If you're watching us on Rogers Television this morning, we say thank you to you on Channel 20. And listening to us on 570 News, we like to tell you compelling stories, and we like to connect with people in our community. You know that, and that's probably why you listen to the show. If you're watching us this morning, you'll notice that we have a guest in studio with us. Her name is Kim McCullough. She is a local mom, and her daughter, Hillary McCullough, had a story to tell. She's not here to tell it anymore. And of course, as moms do, we rally for our babies and for our children. And so her mom, Kim, is here to talk about it with us this morning. Thanks for coming, Kim.
Thank you.
Okay, so I got your, Lisa Drew from our newsroom, sent me your story. She sent me the email that you had sent her. And so she printed it off for me, and I read it. I mean, again, as any mom would, I remember laying on my bed reading it. And just so many times my heart just broke for you, because as you tell your story this morning, people will hear about how hard you fought for your daughter, and how the story doesn't have a happy ending. It doesn't. So let's first of all talk about Hillary. What an amazing girl she was. I love the that you sent me the link so I could see pictures of her and kind of, you know, feel like I could get a little closer to her. So let's start. What? Tell me about your daughter first of all. Tell me about Hillary.
Hillary was the most generous, kind, giving soul you could ever imagine. She gave, and never expected anything back. And her family and friends were very, very important to her. And she went above and beyond, always. And it didn't matter if she had the last cent in her pocket, she would be giving it to a homeless person. She'd go across the street to the in the middle of the intersection, and she'd talk to the homeless people about their stories.
Wants to hear people's stories.
Yes, she wanted to hear people's stories, and she wanted to be there for people. She'd go to the Humane Society, and she would, you know, look at the animals. She had such a such a heart for animals, especially dogs. Our family dog, Rocky, was her, I think, most loved possession in life. So, yes. So as people would see on her Facebook page, where I have posted, she was just a very giving, selfless person.
So as she gets to that age where she's going to go away to college, you're feeling good because yes. you have seen these wonderful human traits in your daughter.
Yes.
You can see that she's a human being who wants to be helpful and who, and so you're feeling good about sending her to Peterborough. She went to Peterborough.
She went to Peterborough.
Yeah. So she goes to Peterborough and she goes to college.
Yes.
She's living in residence.
Yes.
And then sometime early that fall.
Yes.
She is sexually assaulted.
Yes. So, and physically.
And physically assaulted.
Mm-hmm.
And doesn't, she didn't tell you?
No.
She didn't report it?
No.
So at what point are you noticing then that you're, you know, high-spirited, you know, happy child has changed?
She always, she's tried to come home every couple weekends or every weekend, whenever she could. But she also liked to stay at residence to be able to be with friends and that. But we just noticed a change in her as she started drinking, which, of course, she wasn't of age. But at that age, most kids do drink. She never liked the taste of alcohol. She started skipping classes. She wasn't going to her classes. I could see online through the college website under her page that she had on there, under the academic page, that she wasn't going to classes and she was missing classes and everything like that. And she was, one night was driving down the road and she went off the road and flipped a car 5 times.
Wow.
And ended up one night and a volunteer firefighter came and rescued her and she got out. And my daughter and I were home at that time in Kitchener and we drove through a snowstorm and got to her and ended up in the hospital with her, and everything was fine with her, but she was just starting to be reckless and everything.
And so you're seeing this mm-hmm. as a mom, and because we overthink, and then we feel bad about that, are you thinking, like, is this just normal college kind of, you know, I'm out on my own, and I'm going to be the boss of my own self, or is this something more? Were you kind of trying to struggle with that? Like, what's happening here?
Yeah, we were wondering what was happening with her because her personality was changing. And like I said, with the drinking mm-hmm. and we would find that she was drinking in her bedroom, we'd find empty bottles of alcohol. And we were like, what's happening here? Like, you don't drink. And why are you drinking alcohol? Like just what?
Like straight booze.
Vodka right from the bottle.
Yeah. So that is, and this isn't like going to a bar, having 5 or 6 beers, coming home in a cab and having a headache in the morning. This is, we're talking about, you know, going from a non-drinker to drinking bottles of vodka.
Yes.
Straight.
Yes.
And hiding it.
Yes.
So this is
hiding her bottles in the house.
Yeah.
And drinking alone.
Drinking alone.
With her bedroom door closed.
Right. So at what point do you find out what has happened to her?
In April 2015, she was home for the weekend. And my daughter, Carly, my older daughter, she's 24 right now. She was still living at home. And she told myself, my husband, and my daughter about the assault. She had pictures of what her face had looked like. I guess she wasn't going to school at that time. She was trying to cover up with glasses. And she had some bruises on her face and stuff like that. And we tried to ask her, you know, did you know the person? Did you... she just wouldn't answer us, and she was just very withdrawn. And but she did at least tell us, and that's why she was drinking, I think.
Of course.
And I think she was trying to numb the pain, and that was her vice.
So, and as a mom, you—I mean, God, I can only guess that you are, you're furious and you're angry and you're full of rage, but you want to help your daughter, and you know you don't want to push her too far because she's starting to open up to you. Like that's a tough thing when what you want is to find this person and probably string him up.
Yes,
have him charged or you know worse, but she's just giving you what she can give you at
yes.
that time.
Yes. And like I said, we don't know if she knew him or if it was a random act or anything like that. She just wanted to forget about it.
Which we all know is pretty much impossible.
It is. Yeah. It happens to a lot of people, unfortunately. Yeah. And people don't report it. And
yeah.
It's...
So you... And at this point, she... kind of make this decision that she should come home as a family.
Yeah, well, we started, we thought that we would, we hooked up with my husband's employee assistant program through his work.
Yeah.
For counseling. We made a minimum of 3 different appointments, like over the next few months. We tried, to get her to go. At the last minute, she decided not to go, but as a family, we decided to go to get, a sense or some help from the counselor. For what we could do to help Hillary to deal with what she had actually been going through.
Yeah.
Because she was starting to look like she was being, like, depressed.
Mm-hmm.
But the funny thing is that when she was alone or she was home in a room or she's around us, she was sometimes, you could tell she was depressed. But when she was with her friends, she put on a totally different face.
Yeah.
A totally, totally different face. She didn't want help, and like I said, she tried to numb the pain with alcohol. I finally got her into the family physician. I tricked her into getting her in there, and he ended up putting her on antidepressants.
Did you see any help from that?
It takes about 3 weeks for antidepressants to work, 3 to 4 weeks, and it did start to help, but we had pulled her then out of school. She ended up getting a full-time job at a local bakery here. She worked there like for about 6 months. She was doing well. She seemed to be doing well on the medication. And then came October 2015.
Okay, so let's talk about, let's pick it up there.
My husband and I had gone to bed, and then she came and she woke us up, and she told us she had taken a bottle of Tylenol. We also noticed that she had been drinking. We were like, we could not believe that she had done this. So instead of course, calling the ambulance, because I know Tylenol it wasn't going to actually kill her, and it was quicker for us to get her to St. Mary's. So we drove her to St. Mary's Hospital, where she was admitted for a Tylenol overdose. She was there, admitted into an observation unit for a couple of days, and they gave her medicine to counteract the Tylenol. A psychiatrist finally came and saw her after 2 days, talked to her, discharged her home. She called and says, the psychiatrist came and saw me, talked to me. He said, I can go home now. And that was it.
Which is not, in your mind, or I think anybody's mind, enough. Clearly, we have a girl who is in crisis here.
Yeah.
She's in crisis. These are big signs. And for someone to see her, talk to her, and release her, I mean, without talking to you, finding out what her support was, without finding out what your concerns were, just not enough.
No. So we feel that she should have been admitted to the mental health unit, which is only in at Grand River Hospital. But he felt that she was able to go home.
So, okay, so we continue on. Okay, so after that, I mean, she's released, she has antidepressants again, you're obviously hyper alerted to this, to her,
mm-hmm.
But again, I mean, it's a seesaw, and it is, sometimes she looks like she's okay to you, sometimes you're feeling like things are okay.
Yes.
Yeah, but they're not.
But they're not. And then she had quit her job. And then February 2016 came along. And my husband and I were away at that time. And so she was home by herself. Her sister was working at St. Mary's at that time. And she called her sister. She told her she took Tylenol and her sleeping pills this time. So two things. Her sister called 911. Her sister drove to get to the house, and they met at the same time. So then she went to the hospital with her. My husband and I came home. We went the next morning. She was admitted to an observation unit that night. The next morning, we met with a psychiatrist that was assigned to her, and we talked, and we thought, actually, Grandma was there with us, too, and we thought it was in Hillary's best interest to be admitted to the mental health ward. So she was admitted there. She was there, which was only 2 weeks. She saw a psychiatrist that was assigned to her only once. And he prescribed a different antidepressant. Social worker was only saw her once, told her she had an alcohol problem, was numbing it with using alcohol to numb the pain, and that was about it. I tried to talk to call the social worker like 3 or 4 times, left messages, return phone calls, talk to the psychiatrist. You know, like, we need some
tools.
Intervention.
Tools. We need to dig deeper to figure out, you know, how we treat this trauma that this is the root causes, right? If this is all surface stuff for you.
Yeah, and there's no mandatory group, like, there's group sessions at the Grand River Hospital and the mental health unit, but they're not mandatory, which baffles me.
Right.
So she never went to them, or that most of the time they were canceled with no explanation given, and we just thought it was a joke. She was having fun there for 2 weeks, socializing with the other patients.
Yeah,
is what was happening.
Right, avoidance. Yeah,
she of course didn't have access to alcohol, but she had new friends that she could talk to, and she went home for night passes, like just to go for dinner, like come home for dinner with us. And then when she, I want to get back or whatever. And it was just more like a social thing. She wasn't getting the help that she needed.
Mm-hmm.
And after 2 weeks, they discharged her on the medication. And like I said, I never received any more phone calls from any phone calls from the social worker, and never received any phone calls from the psychiatrist.
Just really kind of left with no answers and no help.
No plan.
We are going to take a really quick break, and then we're going to come back, and then we are going to, we'll pick back up on December 21st. Okay. We'll come back. We have, and I got to tell you, Kim, we have a lot of people talking about what an amazing and brave and wonderful mom and woman you are. I can see tweets coming in here. I'll get to those just so you know. People are watching and listening and supporting you and admiring your strength and tenacity. More with Kim as we share the story of her daughter, Hillary, after this on 570 News.
Toronto's young superstars have taken this team to new heights.
Holy mackerel!
The Toronto Maple Leafs' ascension continues. This is your home for Toronto Maple Leafs hockey, 570 News.
You are listening to a heart-wrenching story from Kim McCullough. She is a local mom, and she's sharing the story of her daughter's struggle with mental health services. Not just here in town. Her daughter's name was Hillary, and we'll pick up that story. So we know Hillary is sexually assaulted early in her college year beginnings, and she comes home, and you know something's wrong. We have a couple suicide attempts. And then she's showing signs that she's doing okay.
Yes.
She's getting better. And so she goes back to school. She goes back to school in 2016.
Yeah, she went back to the college in London. And within the first month, she got suspended from college for defending a person at a party. And they kicked her out. And so she was off school for 2 weeks. She had to go back, and she had a mandatory meeting to be able to get back into college with a college counselor. She told us that she met with him, and he said that he thought that she seemed she didn't want to be there, so he just signed her off and she could go back to school. And so
now, does he have this? And of course, he doesn't have the information that she's had suicide attempts, that she's been sexually assaulted. So, you know, there's a lot of missing information in pieces here for sure. So, but yet another kind of attempt where somebody's kind of writing this off instead of maybe saying, okay, this girl needs attention.
Yes.
Yeah.
And there was, like I said, he just signed her off and that was it.
So another kind of failure to serve her. And again, they didn't have that information. No. I understand that, but I get that. Okay, so then there's more reckless behavior. She loses her license.
Yes.
And then, so take me to that day.
December 21st, 2016, she went out for the day to visit friends, was out that evening. My husband and I had gone to bed. Just after midnight, the phone rang. We didn't hear my husband didn't hear anyone on the phone. He asked me if Hillary was home. I said, I didn't know if she was home or not. So my husband went to the washroom, and then he saw the light down in the kitchen was on. He went to the kitchen and saw that she was there. She was standing in front of the medicine cupboard. He asked her what she was doing. She said she was looking for her sleeping pills. She started swaying. Hillary had our phone off the hook, our home phone, but she had her cell phone on a speakerphone. And all of a sudden, Tom heard someone yelling or speaking in the phone saying, "Tom, she's taking pills. Call 911. So at that time, Tom listens to her. We find out, we see Tom goes, he sees these empty pill bottles. She had taken my pills, antidepressants, my husband's pills, her sleeping pills.
So we have a big problem now.
And we had a big problem.
So, and I'm not trying to rush you. I just don't want to run out of time. So you go to ICU and then what happens?
So she was admitted into ICU. Everything sort of, they said she was going to be fine, but then my husband found out that she ended up taking his blood pressure pills. So she ended up on life support. We were told she wasn't going to make it.
Yeah.
She fought for 2 days. She came out of it. She was walking. She was drinking. She was going to the washroom by herself, eating. Everything was fine. She was medically cleared. So they were just waiting for a psychiatrist to come in to see her. Psychiatrist came in and saw her. We voiced our opinions on the mental health unit at Grand River, and we asked if she could go to another city, to another facility. He said no. She was going to be formed, which meant she had no rights. She had to stay in the hospital. So she was going to be going on December 26th to the mental health ward. We walked down with her to the mental health unit. Nurse talked to her privately. Then we hooked up again with Hillary. Hillary told us around 4 o'clock we could go home. She was just going to go lie down. We said, "I love you," gave her hugs and a kiss. See you again in the morning. We went home 7:45 that night. Our phone rang. It was hospital calling to tell us that the night nurse had found her unresponsive. We drove to the hospital, taken to her room, unfortunately, where the co-team was performing CPR on her. We couldn't stay and watch. Half an hour later, after we had been in there, the ICU doctor and intern came into the private room to tell us she was gone. I lost it at that point. I couldn't understand how could she be medically cleared, mm-hmm. and now she was gone. She was dead. It just baffled us. Mm-hmm. And I was angry.
Of course.
I was just very, very angry. They had no explanation for us. They did the autopsy the next day. The coroner said she was a healthy 20-year-old. They could not find any explanation of her death. And then we forward it to September. 9 months later, we finally find out a cause of death, which was a blood clot to the lung.
Do they say that that was because of the medication?
It was not to the medication.
Wow.
And we will never know why she got that blood clot.
Unbelievable. So that brings us to the point, and I know, Kim, you have some specifics. I know you want to urge victims of sexual assault to get help.
Yes.
I know you want them to report.
Report it, because if it's not reported, then the people or the person that is doing the assault is just going to keep doing it, and they're not going to be prosecuted.
I know that you understand too that we have to dig deeper on that. If people report, a lot of people aren't reporting because of the way they're treated by police, by hospitals, by their peers, by media, and that we need to do better in that and understand why people aren't reporting, which leads us into this announcement yesterday from the government for $2.1 billion to rebuild, that's in quotes, the mental health system. Tell me your feelings on that.
Yeah, I kind of found it ironic that that she announced it yesterday and I was coming on today. Yeah. I didn't realize she was going to announce it, but the election is coming up.
Well, that's,
you know what?
Yeah.
And how long have the Liberals been in power and now all of a sudden they're going to focus on mental health? Like, how many people had to die from mental health before our government decided that it needed more services available to the people dealing with mental health and that now it was a priority? Why now?
Yeah, I don't think that I don't think that that's a wrong statement to make. You know, it's right to be skeptical.
It's a little too late for people like my daughter, but by me telling her story, I hope that it'll help others. I don't know why our mental health services are the way they are. Is it because they're overworked, understaffed, or if they just don't care? I'm not sure.
I think maybe there might be a lot of those things going on. We want to thank you, Kim, for telling your story, and we want to thank you for sharing it because a lot of people are listening right now and they're hearing stories about themselves. They're hearing bits and pieces of their own lives, and you never know. I've learned one thing from this job. You never know who you're talking to.
Yes.
You never know what your story is going to mean to them. I have some messages coming in, and before we go, we're super late. I just want to read this one to you because I think it's important. What a heart-wrenching story told by a brave and loving mother. Many people applaud you, Kim, for speaking about Hillary and a difficult topic. She sounds like she was a beautiful soul.
She was.
Thank you for coming and sharing
your
story.
Thank you for letting me tell her story.
Let's hope for good things that come from this.
Yes.
In Hillary's name.
Yes, thank you.
News is next at 10 o'clock. Mike Farwell is on the way as well. This is 570 News.